Thank you very much for coming. It's wonderful to see everybody here. This is, I think it's the first time that the Gloucester Writers Center has had an event in honor of Veterans Day. And we're very honored to have James Grigg and Heather DuPont read tonight. I was just going to say a few words about Veterans Day. It originated as Armistice Day. You all can chime in on November 11th, 1919, which was the first anniversary at the end of World War I. Congress passed a resolution in 1926 for an annual observance, and November 11th became a national holiday in 1938. Unlike Memorial Day, Veterans Day pays tribute to all American veterans, living or dead, but especially gives thanks to living veterans who served their country during war or peacetime. The military men and women who serve and protect the U.S. come from all walks of life. They are parents, children, grandparents, friends, neighbors, co-workers, and are an important part of their country and their communities. Speaking about Heather DuPont's poetry and James Grigg's poetry, I feel that they are both bearing witness, speaking not only for themselves, but to keep the voices of others from the past and present so they are not forgotten. They are making the invisible visible for us so we can share this knowledge. Their poems reflect a unity of impression. The deepest effects cannot be brought about. The soul is not deeply moved without a certain continuity of effort, without a certain recurring focus or repetition of intention. We begin to experience rain when we see and hear sheets of rain falling over a period of time. And we know rain best when it touches us. Eli Wiesel, the author of the acclaimed memoir Night, has written that stories and poems sensitize people. We must not be indifferent. These workshops, like ours, the Cape Man Veterans Writing Workshop, and others everywhere in this country, readings and symposiums, can serve as the road back for veterans, back to their country and their communities. The interactions and willingness to listen is helpful throughout their lives and ours. James was born in Bremen, Germany in 1946. He moved to the USA and was raised here in Gloucester, Mass. After graduating from Gloucester High School, he joined the Marines in 1965. He served in Vietnam from 1966 to 67. In 1969, he was honorably discharged as a sergeant, having worked as a weapons and marksmanship instructor. James has been writing recently since 2013 and participating in the Veterans Writing Workshop since that time in Gloucester. Most of his writings are about war, about his own experiences, and those told to him by other Vietnam veterans, many suffering from PTS. He is a published poet with an established writing practice. I can tell you he has hundreds of poems. He has read publicly in Gloucester, Lowell, and Western Mass. James.
I'd like to start off with a poem. I wrote for three guys that went in the Marine Corps with me, went to Vietnam, came back, but they couldn't adjust when they came back. This is a story about, a poem about them, lost friends. Most every night they visit me, these three friends from days gone by, reminding me that all's not well. Their life has gone awry. All three came home from Vietnam, their sanity self-queried. You're crazy, man, you've lost your mind. their rambling thoughts all hurried. No welcome back, these three Marines. No good to see you, boys. Just ridicule and stinging jeers, discarded like broken toys. They tried to accept the bitterness, constant taunting by the masses. Their country flipped upside down, its people turned to asses. Spit upon and called baby killers. They just wanted to live their life, but found it very hard to do with constant unending strife. They took to drink to drown the past and calm their raging mind, reaching for peace and serenity, a place they could not find. All three have since passed this life, a life they could not live. They gave the call their fullest. Now there's nothing left to give. They tap upon my window pane to let me know they're here. They beckon me to join with them to Valhalla soon so near. Most of my stuff is kind of somber, I guess is a nice word for it. I'm going to read something that I don't particularly read too often, but it was one of the first pieces I ever read at the Writers' Center. Called The Ghost of Hill 35. The firefight started in the dead of the night, the enemy flanked just off to our right. We opened up with intense, deadly fire to kill the VC and change their desire. All of a sudden, an explosion lit up the sky, had us all wondering what the hell and why. The fighting stopped as quick as it started. The intense gray smoke slowly parted. We went up the next morning, and damn, what a fright. Even the hardened looked away at the sight. The headless body lay quiet and still, abandoned here, left at their will. I took a quick glance, and in an instant, its soul leapt up and changed my existence. Emboldened by fear, it lives on in my head, forever instilled with thoughts of the dead. It's there in my sight, it's there in my dreams, it's there in my mind, forever it seems. The idea of dying is no stranger at all. I'm ready, ready to answer the call. 1,000-yard stare, a lot of people have asked me about it. 1,000-yard stare, would it be empty, a wasted look, a stare of emptiness? Not at all, for in that stare you visualize the past. Rambling sights tumble by, sometimes a realistic sight, but just maybe it's not. The memories of the past just playing a cruel joke in your mind. Ghosts of days gone by appear, no doubt intent of taking you with them. An empty stare? By no means. Bizarre thoughts envision themselves in your mind and eyes. The ghosts, when will they come? An empty stare? No, but one that relives the past and all its bloody horror. You see the gunshots, the rockets, the mortar explosions, the death of a comrade, the flashes, the smells, the fire, all vividly etched into your senses. The moaning of the wounded, painful to the ears. An empty stare? No, not at all, but an ever-present look at the past. No much how you try, you can't change the past, so you close your eyes. Death hopefully comes quick. That's 1,000-yard stare. Here's something I wrote for Memorial Day. And it's specifically for the Vietnam vets. I wrote it for a bunch of them. It's called Aging Youth. Youth passes by so quickly in the paddies of Vietnam. Days meant nothing. Time stood still. Life was a mere blink of an eye. Yet age ate away at young lives, souls placed in a time capsule, perhaps never to be opened. These warriors in their late teens, at 20 they were old timers, battle hardened, having lost the gentility of mankind. Here today, gone tomorrow, caring only for his comrade in arms, yet they are waning, killed, wounded, or left for the States. Not wanting to befriend anew, life became solitary. Communications became a nod. Dark eyes, dark empty eyes showed his plight. A forlorn gaze, unrealized. He knows this war will never cease, forever lingering on, clasping heart and mind, encrusting the senses, an age far beyond his years, this heavy burden he carries, never to be put aside, enduring to the end of time. Wow. Here's one about probably 3 or 4 years ago. A friend of mine's grandson, he was in the fourth grade at the time, invited me to a Memorial Day get-together at his school. And I told him, yeah, I'd go. So I went. And the name of the poem is A Tear of Pride. At a grammar school Memorial Day ceremony, a little girl brought a tear to this Marine's eye. She sang the Marine Corps hymn in a soft, angelic voice, bringing sudden remembrance of friends and comrades lost. But it was as if she was singing for me alone. We made eye contact and it never strayed as she sang in a sweet, melodious sound. Could she tell she was tugging at my heart, at my soul, slowly opening my heart like the pages of a cherished book? Was it for the Vietnam vet or just an old man wearing a Marine Corps jacket? Was she aware how moved he was? Listen to this cherub of heaven. How could she know this petite chanteuse singing this tribute to an old and tired vet? Oh, how I wish that those that had fallen could hear this child. Perhaps they did. A couple of years ago, I went, I don't know if people know, Preston Hood, he's read here a few times, but he invited me to go to the Moving Wall in Springfield. And I wrote two poems because of that. One of them, The Moving Wall. They came, trickled in, the curious, to check it out, relatives and Vietnam vets, those who cared, remembering, all who sacrificed and gave their life, their names upon the wall, 58,272. They cry out, lest they be forgotten. And for an instant, in our minds, the name come alive. Faces remembered. It pains to read the names. Hands tremble as they touch the letters carved upon the stone. Souls cry within. It's lost blood that built this wall. Oh, those of those who fell in Vietnam. Yet the people still shun, ignoring, denying the meaning of this granite wall, a monument, the names engraved, lost comrades. Mere touches come alive. As day ends, long shadows reach out, embracing those who came and cared. Now, while I was there, I got to thinking. We had quite a few guys in our outfit. You never knew their name. I was one of them. I picked up a moniker, Jocko, because at the time I had a thin pencil-lined mustache, and they all kidded me and said I looked like an Englishman. So I got the name Jocko. Well, that was quite often over there. You only knew the guy by a nickname. So I wrote this, Among the Names. I met him there at the wall that heals, they claim. He looked confused, and I asked what's wrong. Could I help? I wouldn't mind. He looked at me and slowly muttered, I can't find my friend. He died in Nam. I never knew his name. We called him Chief, a quiet guy, an Indian, from New Mexico, I think. In the paddies of Vietnam, he saved my ass. The price he paid was his. He beckons me. I know it's here, on the wall. It cries out to be released. I fear I'll never find it. Perhaps in death we'll meet again. Thank you for your time. We did an exercise, and I took a line from Tim O'Brien. And the poem's called Back in Nam. Here I am standing by a rice paddy, trying to remember, is this it? Is this where they shell the shit out of us, oh, so many, many years ago? rockets and mortar rounds dropping like monsoon rains. Damn, nothing looks familiar. Nothing seems the same. The stench sure hasn't changed. I keep looking around. Yeah, this is the place. Damn, a lot of guys got wounded here. Christ, Corporal Jackson bought the farm here. A short-timer from the Midwest who just wanted to go home. He went home all right in a flag-draped casket. Poor bastard. I came back to find peace and closure, but my mind is racing out of control. Too many thoughts, too many memories. Feeling as though someone was watching me, I looked around. And standing in a paddy is an old farmer leaning on a shovel. I waved, and he raised the shovel above his head like a sword raised in victory. We exchanged glances. He had a wizened look about him. His eyes seemed to pierce my soul. I couldn't talk. Understanding his plight, his mind no doubt telling me, go away, leave us be. You brought much harm. Look at our land, barren and fruitless. Look at our people, broken and deformed. I felt the pain, but I could not reply. I had no answer. In the brochure that you had passed around, Rough Seas is the heading for this. And this is something I wrote. I had a very dear friend of mine pass away, and a lot of feelings came through my mind because this guy never should have died this early. So I wrote this called Rough Seas. The calming sea, a mere illusion, the mariner knows all too well. A turn of wind, deceitful seas, will founder ships and carefree souls. Though darkened skies will not deter their perilous journey in roughened waters, nor a tempest roar that silenced voices of men that call their God in vain. At mercy to the wrath of nature, uncaring of the labors of man, the towering waves tear souls and sails. Such fury has the mind awakened. Here's something, you probably all heard this one. In Search of Solace. I think everybody that's been in a combat situation and returned, it's what you're looking for. In Search of Solace. And so we travel endlessly this trodden, well-worn path, a trail journeyed by so many to quell their inner wrath. It's not to be an easy task, for what we seek it hides. In transit, thoughts seem to amass and churn up our insides. For many years we bore this plight, this burden harsh within, the remembrance of a caustic war and the battles where we've been. With bridges burnt so far behind, regretting deeds of past, this turbulence within our life, the die of change is cast. This arduous trek, a weary one, with bridges still ablaze, beneath a dark and somber sky to rid this mental haze. But through it all, we journey on in the winter of our life. A seed of hope exists inside to end this lasting strife. I was talking to Heather about this. It's not anything to do with military, but it has to do with people that are left behind. Mothers, wives, especially here in Gloucester with the fishermen. My father was in the Merchant Marines. He was forever gone out at sea. Then one day I was sitting on the boulevard and saw this bronze lady, and the thoughts came to me, and I wrote this down. The bronze lady, unwavering on constant vigil, she stands upon a rock with children always by her side on this weathered granite block. Her eyes always fixed on the sea beyond the dog bar and further. Today a watch, it is for naught, the fog it won't dissuade her. The bank's old thick and menacing, it blankets the briny sea, but her stare goes on unceasing, for a man, what could he be? But the raging sea, a ruthless foe, that found his boats and mariners, a greedy sea that claims its prey, of fishermen and sailors. Perhaps in time the fog will melt to the sun-filled sky. The seagulls tack and ride the wind to fly the heavens high. Now seas ebb calm upon the shore, the line of sight so clear. She peers out at the tranquil sea, but spies nothing nor near. The horizon a long and empty line, no ship a sail in sight. As the cruel sea rests another soul, a seafarer's undaunting plight. Yet with hope and sadness in her eyes, she maintains in dire straits her gaze forever endless cause, this stoic bronze lady waits. One of them had a good friend that was a Korean veteran and attended the writer's classes since its beginning. Mel Olson. Mel's words. These words he chose to wake the mind, a barrier to climb, decipher. Another sunset mist as he searched in depth the movement of the sky. But days went by unknowing what path led to his demise. He wrote so carefully, precise, of war and brotherhood, of icy winds and misery. Such words he penned in a hurried pace, yet darkness fell so unexpected. Too soon the stars appeared. White crosses grow. A sea of green, this meadow lush, white crosses sprouting forth. In rows erect, they stand unending. No flowers grow to celebrate the theft of youth. Past battles fought, but laid to rest with shattered dreams, dark memories. For the living, their blood was shed, and the body torn in turmoil, unforgiving. On far-off foreign soil, they lost their soul, war's sacrificial lambs. No words need spoken in this hallowed place. The many tears shout loud for the memory of those laid here, eternal rest. I wrote this after a discussion with Wendy, and it kind of fits every war. But it was a discussion we had had about World War I. So I wrote this. The birds still sing. Listen to the birds singing, breaking this pastoral silence, unaware that hell will soon break loose in just minutes, barely enough time to reread a cherished letter or glance at a worn picture. Not a word is spoken, just waiting for the signal, the shrill alarm of a whistle, and clamber up the walls, free of this rat-infested hole, and trudge through the quagmire they call a field. Once soil that bore its fruit abundant, past barbed wire into no man's land, living hell, afraid but never questioning, our turn on the offensive, the mind awry with thoughts into this muddy pasture of hell, parked and upheaved with craters, body parts strewn about, like seeds in the winds and the rats tearing at the flesh left from onslaught days ago. Our ravenous machine guns cutting down men as wheat would aside. Artillery shells bursting above, raining down razor-sharp steel, biting into soul and body, wreaking havoc. Hundreds wounded or killed, forced into retreat, back into the trenches. Many lost, nothing gained, but in the wire above the trenches, a bird still sings. Thank you.
Oh, and I want to introduce Heather DuPont. Heather, I don't remember, I think it's a few years that you've been stopping by at the Cape Ann Veterans Writing Workshop. Heather retired to New Hampshire after a career working with military veterans at a VA hospital. She has been published in the Poets Touchstone, New Hampshire Poetry Society Journal. She participated in the first 4 years of Writers in the Round Star Island, as well as 8 years in the long-running Monadnock Pastoral Poets Retreat. Recently, she has been attending the Veterans Writing Workshop in Gloucester. Some of her poems portray aspects of veterans' lives, and as she says in our book, it was her pleasure to give John Rogers a framed copy of her poem War Dance while he was still living. He wanted that story to be made public. She also told me that her experience with the Veterans Administration is based on truth and facts. She worked there for 20 years, and most of her writing is about veterans and some about family as well. And I want to welcome Heather DuPont to the Gloucester Writers' Center.
Thank you, Dorothy.
So yes, I don't have a large body of work, but I have pieces that I've written from stories that were told to me by veterans. Three of them are in the anthology, and Dorothy said to me that she tried to find this Uncheong on a map of Korea, and I said, gee, I didn't have any trouble finding it. Of course, that was back when I wrote it, which was a while ago. So I looked up a map on the internet, and I realized something, and that is that the map that I used when I looked it up was on a website for the Korean War, and so it was more of a military map. And what has happened is that some of the names of the places have been changed. So I don't know, now that I know that, if I wouldn't write War Dance from Korea. So, but I'll tell you, this gentleman wanted his story told. He was thrilled with this poem, and I think, you know, I spoke briefly at a veterans conference last year, just to bring up the point that I had been to a workshop when I was still working with veterans. I took workshops to always try to improve my working with them, and When we broke for lunch, a young woman said that she was in grad school. She said, a lot of that stuff those veterans talk about never happened. My professor, mm-hmm. oh yeah, this is why we need to do this. My professor of sociology or whatever said there's no documentation that they weren't given a hero's welcome, and I don't know where all that came from, and he said it didn't. And I said, well, I have firsthand stories. I said, and my veterans aren't liars. They're in a lot of pain. But my point is that what we need is more of this, these stories in print for documentation, just because history repeats itself. I would love to see all of Jim's work in a book.
Yeah, me too.
A book of his poems. It's a documentation of the pain, the heartache, the truth. Mm-hmm. And so I know maybe that's something we can get going and get you a book, because it needs to be out there. But anyway, this one. And the reason it's called a war dance, and some people don't understand the reference, the poem's in the form of a villanelle, which is a European folk dance that then, I guess, a Frenchman made a poetic form out of. And so, it has a certain form to it. And because it's based on a dance, and because therapy can be a dance between the therapist and the client, that's how this came about. So it isn't meant to be, you know, something pejorative about war dancing or anything like that. And this is for John Julius Rogers, born September 23rd, 1929, and he died September 23rd, 2009, on his 80th birthday. He brought chocolates and a flower today. He knows there's no romance, doesn't pretend, but hopes I'll listen to what he has to say. He feels family and reason are slipping away. His friends have passed on from that war, he contends, then hands me a book with a photograph today. He brags, I was quite a ladies' man back in the day. The photo shows two houseboys with him and his men. He wants me to see what he's trying to say. They fought smart, played light, outran the sun's rays. Camaraderie among men and boys, no thought of its end. He brought letters and songs from yesterday. In our camp, he boasts, there were no feet of clay. We were tough. His brimming eyes give way again. He needs me listening to what he must say. Ambushed by mercenaries, our camp betrayed. They cut off the heads of those boys. The caged men watched helpless. He brought chocolates today. He knows I'll listen to what he needs to say. He came in for treatment for his PTSD and alcoholism, which he developed as a, because, you know, a means to treat. He was self-medicating, basically. And we do see that, and it's quite understandable, I think, you know. Alcohol makes it go away if there's nobody to listen and if there's, you know, no treatment, no help. So I have another one that I know Jim likes, Faded Songs. And this is dedicated to Van, Johnny, Vincent, Albert, and Millard in remembrance of our visit to Washington, D.C., November 11, 2005. We went on a trip to D.C., PTSD. It's a PTSD program that these gentlemen were from, part of. And some other staff members and I, we went down to the wall as part of sort of in vivo, you know, as much as you can get. It's therapeutic for some, and for some they need to go back again, and, you know, it's a process. It's not a magical, you know, oh, I've been to the wall, everything's all right with the world. He used to dream he had a girl back home with a flower press between pages and a book of poems kept for him, waiting for his return. His father died, and they told him he was too young to go home. He couldn't be of any use to his mother, even though he was the oldest in a large family, so they made him a lance corporal, a squad leader for men close to his age, 18. We stand facing the wall, his trembling fragmentation palpable as he whispers, I need to sit down. I bring him hot cocoa and a hot dog, all they have at the stand. He remembers being in the bush all the time. He remembers being frightened. He remembers the responsibility for the lives of his men. And he knows some of their names are there on the wall. During taps, we glance sideways to the statue. Three soldiers sharing arms and one shouldering his M60 and ammo sleeves. In the ensuing silence, I wonder aloud, what might they be thinking? And he tells me, they're thinking, I hope I make it home. At twilight, I make a rubbing of the name of a football star, extinguished too soon after a high school graduation ceremony. He developed survival skills while exploring a rainforest tainted with orange and with sounds reverberating from bombs bursting in air and on the ground. Staring nowhere with his nightmare diagnosis of post-traumatic stress, he returned home having lost the ability to hear mermaids call and psalmists sing. Like an incarnate Statue of Liberty, I hold in an unopened book while trying to lighten the cavernous lack of a welcome home. So I have a couple that Jim likes very much. I will read those. This one is after Pablo Neruda's General Franco in Hell. He wrote a well-known poem imagining General Franco in Hell, where he belongs. To those who wage war while seated in armed chairs, you will be slim and fit, dining daily on MREs, bushwhacking up the next hill and down that hill and back up that same hill and down that hill and up the same damn hill, carrying your fully loaded pack, your M16 and ammo until it's your time again to haul the M60 and bandolier along with your fully loaded pack. You will be granted leisure time between barrages of exploding shells as you are digging in, digging out, digging in, digging out, digging in, digging out, to lounge on the shores of swamps and tend the rot among your toes and in your crotch. You will swat those fucking flies that bite you and bite you and bite you until you know there's nowhere on your swollen skin left. But there will be mud baths for those bites. You will sink in the shitholes that lie as village latrines, sink so low you'll feel your breathing muck in with that suction sucking you down. You will always have an entourage. Bloodied bodies with protruding bones will wait for you. Wait to be bagged and zipped. Wait to be stacked in piles. Wait to be loaded for evac. Wait with you. Wait with you. And you will never sleep alone. You will wake with her smoky aura, incensing eternity, that village woman, supine in her hut, with burned breasts beside her charred child. That came from a veteran who had severe PTSD. I don't have permission to use his name, but it was written for him and some of the stories he told me. And so this is another true poem, and I do not have permission to use this veteran's name. War cry. He told command he was feeling too much pain, could no longer separate wrong from right. What if his mind imploded? What defines insane? Witness to bodies charred, children slain, his cries garbled, stifled by official might, after he documented his abysmal pain. He dragged shattered friends to cover in vain, implored as he held those bones, blood bright amid desert explosions. Killing is insane. He prayed to be relieved. What would they gain if they ordered him to shoot with his agonized sight? He warned them his soul suffered too much pain. He saw everyone as able, felt like Cain. What consequence if he continued to fight? Could he explode? The blowback would stain. They ignored his protests, pronounced his brain stable, returned his weapon, extinguished the light. His letter home dictated by darkness, he aimed the barrel through his mouth, ended his pain. Thank you all very much.
I wrote at the Dorothy's class, which was a great time to talk about. My husband was in World War II. He served in the Asiatic Pacific, and he came home with post-traumatic stress that nobody understood and that I didn't understand all through my marriage to him. And so this poem is called Freedom Is Not Free. Freedom is not free. A price has been paid for our freedom. Lives have been lost.
Military personnel have been killed and injured. Lives have been changed forever. Stories must be told. This is a part of history which needs to be recorded. Post-traumatic stress has affected many lives. Many repressed memories need to be addressed for veterans to heal from their traumatic experiences of war. Veterans can relate to the suffering of other veterans and their families from the effects of war by sharing memories and dealing with the past. Veterans finding others who share their experiences can someday find peace in their civilian life. Families need to understand that when a loved one returns home from war, a changed person comes home, needing love, understanding, and family and community support. The world must know that freedom is not free.
Did you say you wanted to?
Well, I'm trying to remember this poem.
Take a check.
All right.
This is Stan Feener.
It's me. This is a poem I wrote as a senior in high school. And after 4 years of relative unsuccess in high school, I happened to win the senior class poetry award. Go figure.
Was this Gloucester High School?
Yeah, it was called the Ingalls Poetry Award. There was a woman, her name was Jeremy Ingalls, I think. No old timers here, huh? Okay. Anyhow, she wrote all this metaphysical stuff. I mean, I got a copy of a book she published as part of my winnings for the activity, and I couldn't understand any of it, you know? But it was fun. It was something nice, and I'll try to remember how I began the poem. It has something to do with military, in a way. The surf retreats, bit by bit. No, that's not right. The shore retreats bit by bit, destroyed by time and force. The sea runs on as if it rides a wild, untamable horse. The beaten, barren dunes look down with mute and windswept face. The trackless sands, the grass bent down, all seem to bear disgrace. Compare these lines to all mankind and answer, if you can. Will man destroy himself by force, or force destroy the man?
Oh, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. I have another light.
Okay.
Oh, well, this one.
No, come on.
Oh, I like this one, and it's just to lighten up the mood here a little. This is based on Kilmer's poem, Trees. I think that I shall never see a calculator made like me. A me that likes martinis dry. And on the rocks, a little rye. A me that taps a foot and grins whenever Dixieland begins. A me that looks at girls and such. But mostly girls and very much. Yes, they make computers for a fee. But only moms can make a me. With acknowledgement to Mad Magazine, in which this was originally published.
It was published in Mad Magazine?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know how you
see, me worry?
some things resonate when you when you read them or yeah. or listen to them as we have tonight.
Yeah. Did you send it to Mad Magazine yourself?
No. It was published as part of the magazine.
Oh, I thought it was your. Was that your poem?
No, no, it wasn't my poem at all.
Oh. Well.
I take no credit for it.
It's Alfred E. Newman's.
Alfred E. Newman did it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Starting over. I am broken, but to remember how life is wrested from each suffered child, each indignity borne by years of labor, each scraping of the iron skillet, each sharing of food left over, thinned by water, each worker's thirst and migrants, each desire for life stolen, for everything stolen, each soul abandoned. Praise the food of others, each home with heat, each family well, free of disease. Praise those who clean house, discard, fix, persist.
This is a poem by Siegfried Sassoon, who
served
in World War I in France. And it's written about a memorial that was put up, I think, in honor of the British soldiers who and French soldiers who died in Ypres, in Passchendaele, okay? Which was a terrible, slaughter. So, and I'm inspired to do this because of what you said about the young woman who was taking a course in sociology or social work and what her professor said. It's horribly shocking.
Yeah. I was angered.
Yeah. I think I would have swatted her, but it's against my religion.
Yeah. I didn't want to go to jail.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably did the right thing. Who will remember passing through this gate the unheroic dead who fed the guns? Who shall absolve the foulness of their fate, those doomed, conscripted, unvictorious ones? Crudely renewed, the salient holds its own. Paid are its dim defenders by this pomp. Paid with a pile of peace complacent stone, the armies who endured that sullen swamp. Here was the world's worst wound, and here with pride their name liveth forever, the gateway claims. Was ever an immolation so belied as these intolerably nameless names? Well might the dead who struggled in the slime, rise and deride this sepulcher of crime. Mm-hmm. It's a great anti-war poem.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for a great evening. Thank you so much.